I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we are back for episode 129 of Digital Divination.
129? That reminds me that I'm an employee of Wizards of the Coast and my opinions are mine and not theirs.
Yes, that is, you know, it seems like 128 reminded you of that as well.
It did.
Every number reminds you of that.
I am mandatorily reminded of that every time I appear.
Very good. Well, I will first point out to our listeners that I have changed backgrounds. I now have a green screen of a fire. No, I actually have an actual fire. We're painting my office, so our whole downstairs we had to move out of, and all my bookcases are put away and everything. So for this episode and maybe the next one, I'll be up here in front of the cozy fire.
Or not appear in front of the cozy fire. We can have the episode just be like one of those Netflix shows that's like 8 hours of cozy fire.
And none of us
like
talking.
Crackling. That's right. That's right.
We'll do that staring for the next one. That'll be good. Yeah. That'll be good. Well, speaking of numbers, I was thinking we needed to get a chicken update from Ron, especially given the extreme value that chickens have now in today's marketplace.
That's right. Well, and the number is three only because, I mean, we had as many as eight chickens, but over the course of the past couple months, we lose one every couple of weeks. That seems to be a winter thing because we have the whole, we've got the coop and then the run is all closed off and only part of the top is closed off because you've got a big willow tree that covers it. But in the winter, when all the leaves fall off the willow tree, a very wily animal could just climb up the willow tree, slip in between the branches with no leaves in the way, and then get right into the chicken run. And there appears to be some wily animal that does just that every couple of weeks. So our flock is down from eight to three.
Wow.
But that's enough. They're still doing their work even through the winter. I had eggs from my backyard today. I feel like a robber baron about that. I'm like, oh yeah, I had eggs.
Wow. Well, it's sad about the dwindling number of chickens. Is that something you like kind of build up again in the spring with your, I remember when you got all your little chicks.
Well, yes, we'll probably get another little flock in the spring. You can't add, as far as I understand it, you can't add one or two chickens to a big flock because the old hens will just bully and peck the newcomer to death sometimes.
Oh, wow.
But if you've got like a big enough number and we raise them so that they're separate, if we get another six maybe, then I think we can introduce the six to the older three and they kind of have to get along.
Hmm.
I think maybe, that'll be our experiment for the next, I'll let you know the next chicken update.
Okay.
There are a fair number of people here around in our neighborhood in Vancouver who have some chickens, and they'll have them, you hear them in the backyard sometimes as you walk by a fence, but there's a couple people who have their chicken runs like kind of in the front yard-ish.
Hmm. Really?
Some coops and yeah, it's maybe they don't have room in the backyard or whatever, but you can walk by and you can see them. There is one house by the park that we sometimes go to that has just so many chickens just in their front yard, fenced off, of course, just loose all the time. They were playing in the snow the other day. It was amazing. And I also have a local feed store, which is sometimes where we get dog food and sometimes where they also, it's also a hardware store, has some chickens. It has a couple geese, a couple ducks and a couple donkeys.
Wait, for sale?
Go look at. No, they're just there. Like they're just there in the front of the,
okay. like a petting zoo.
I mean, you're sort of not supposed to pet them, but also like if they come up to the fence, and now they're showing off like pigeons. They've got like cages of pigeons by the front door that they raise, that the owners have raised. They do sell rabbits and other birds inside as well. So it's a pet shop, a hardware store, and a feed store, basically all rolled into one.
Wow.
Yeah. It's neat. I didn't know they had donkeys for like the first 3 months we were here.
There's a place just north of us, because we're in a farm valley, right? There's a place north of us where they have goats, and they've recently put out a sign that says goat hugs $5. And I think if you go and pay them, it's basically a petting zoo, right? You can go hug their goats, and their goats are friendly enough to give you hugs.
You wouldn't be able to stop me.
you'd run out of $5 bills as fast as you got them, right?
Man, I'd be going to the ATM more often to get cash.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if I could run a tab.
Put it on my bill.
Yeah. You just have a monthly goat hug subscription. They probably do that.
That's right.
Would 100% do that.
Wow. Well, here on the island, there are some chickens, but the more interesting thing is a couple blocks down, for the longest time, they had a sign, beware of the raptors. And they had turkeys.
Ooh.
Turkeys. And they would perch up on the roof and fly down at you and stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Perching turkeys. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. So they were, it was.
I would expect. I mean, for Camino, this is, you know, my stereotyping that area, right? I would think that orcas would just come out of the water and snatch them or something, I guess. I don't know. I think that orcas are probably a pretty big problem up there.
Yeah. We've seen the orcas in the buoy line, so pretty close to shore. But, the turkeys and the orcas don't mix. So, it's okay.
It's for the best.
Yes.
That's right. I do remember reading that one of the only natural predators of moose are orcas. Because moose will go into the water, and it's one of the few creatures that like can threaten something the size of a moose is an orca, and orcas will eat them if they can. So,
wow, you know, and this is the farmyard and orca update for today.
That's right.
Well,
but hey, we should talk Starfinder, right?
We could, especially last Wednesday, so that would be a week and a day from when this gets published. There was a special Paizo Live on Starfinder Second Edition.
Yeah.
With kind of a lot of information.
It was. It was with Thurston Hillman. Thirsty, who is the associate editor now for Paizo.
Producer.
Associate producer?
Producer. Associate editor is a different entirely. Oh. Lower.
Shoot.
On the
poking, you're right. You're right. Yeah. I was thinking. Like, he's associate whatever Eric Mona is, isn't it?
Right. Yes. Yes. And Eric Mona is the publisher.
Associate publisher.
Yes.
Yeah. You said producer.
Did I say producer?
You did. Producer. And that made me very confused. Yes.
Associate publisher. Yes, that's what it publisher, is. Publisher. Yeah, I always think of like a magazine or comic or something, like the editor's in charge of everything. But yeah, it's a publisher. Anyway,
Have an editor in chief a while back.
Right. That's what it was.
That position no longer exists, technically. Right. I would say.
So Thirsty was the former creative director for Starfinder, who's now the associate publisher, was there. And then Jenny Jarzabski, who was a senior developer and is now the creative director for Starfinder, had an hour-long chat about what's coming for Starfinder 2nd Edition, which I thought was pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, yeah. We talked about some of the stuff before because we knew what was going on, but there's some new stuff in here.
Some new stuff coming out.
And some more details on the old stuff.
Right. So they started off with the Galaxy Guide, which we talked about a couple episodes ago.
It's the very next product that's coming out, right?
Yes, in
May.
April or May, one of those two. Well, I thought I saw that the special. I thought you could get the special edition sooner, or no? Maybe. I don't know. May. Okay, May. I don't know for sure. I'm not looking at it right now, but I'll believe Jason because he probably knows these things.
Maybe.
Right. But a couple of things that they talked about in there, which I thought were interesting, was that there are lots of adventure seeds in the Galaxy Guide, and lots of different types of adventures. And they kind of went through, you know, if you like a horror adventure, you like a, you know, high fantasy adventure, all these different things. They have kind of adventure seeds for those up front to get you started.
Kind of like telling you where you might go in the galaxy, right, to do that.
Right, yeah. So it like a world guide kind of thing. And the other thing they mentioned was they made a bunch of promissory notes is how Thurston said this. So they highlighted things that basically they're saying, these are things that exist in Starfinder, and you will see this down the road in other products, is how I read that. So,
I mean, that's, you know, pretty something you want to do. Like, you want to put all these, you want to sow these seeds, you know, plant these seeds so you can sow them later and be like,
yeah, foreshadowing. Oh,
you know how we talked about, yeah, foreshadowing, exactly. You know how we talked about X? Well, here it is, and it leads to Y and Z.
Well, and that's sustaining a viable ecosystem for creativity there is every one of those seeds that you then grow into something, you have to plant at least two more to go further down the line, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what I thought was really cool is something that he mentioned about the cover of the Galaxy Guide. Did you all catch that?
Oh, I did not. What is this?
So they're talking about the special edition cover?
No, it. I think it's the regular cover. Yeah, it's the regular cover that I'm looking at. It's this one that had this big old fiery thing. It's got the Witch Warper on there.
With the Witch Warper on it,
The vast
fighting
the big fiery thing it's fighting is a Luminantra, something that Thirsty made is a CR-25 creature.
Ooh. Oh, it just looked like some kind of fractal monster. I didn't know
what that's what I thought it was too. And then he said, no, 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 this is what this is. And later on, he talks about this being the highest level thing in the just now announced Alien Core coming out.
Which a couple weeks ago, I remember hearing that it had been the Alien Archive again for this new edition. And Jason, you were the one who was like, that's not right, but I don't know if we've announced everything. Now we know.
Now we
Alien
know.
Core.
Alien Core. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So basically, this Galaxy Guide has got all these adventure seeds in it and talks about all these different places that you can go and do things. And it foreshadows this massive CR-25 creature now on the cover of it.
Yeah.
So a big boss of some sorts.
Very curious about that. And I may go peek at it later.
Okay. Well, I'm curious too.
Not to wave my privilege around.
Oh,
okay. That's okay. That's why you're here, is because you've got all this knowledge and privileges. Yes. There you go.
Okay.
But I keep it to myself. I hoard it greedily like a golem.
All right. Next thing you talked about was the Player Core, which comes out in August, Gen Con release. So I'm volunteering at Gen Con to run some things, and one of the options they gave us for you can get rewards is hard copy of the Player Core. So, and I'm on the subscription anyway, but I'd like to get an extra so I can have it for other people, reference, things like that. I might even have a friend that no longer gets all the Starfinder
like
stuff. You might enjoy a copy. I don't know. Things like that. But so we talked about the Player Core. Interesting things mentioned there. 6 new classes, 10 new ancestries, new skills, new spells, and everything you need to play Starfinder will be in this. You will not need any Pathfinder books in order to play Starfinder if you have the Player Core.
Yeah.
Okay. So very much so different from the the playtest, which really requires the Player Core.
Yes.
The Pathfinder Player Core to be able to play.
How many ancestries are in the playtest? Because that sounds like more ancestries that are in the playtest.
Well, we know the 6 class. We know the...
I know the classes.
Ancestry.
And we know the 10. How many how many do we have in the playtest? I'll reach right behind me.
I'm not sure. That's what I'm
wondering. That's what I'm going to look at right now. ancestries, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 14 in here.
Well,
no, there's 10. There's 10 in the Starfinder 2nd edition. There are 10 of them.
Okay.
What am I kidding?
It's going to be the same 10. It's going to be Android, Barathu, Human, Kasatha, Lashunta, Patra, Shiren, Skittermander, Vesk, Isoki.
Yeah, I counted languages, and I counted the Borai, Pastimi, and
Bakri. There's no languages ancestry you get to play, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind. Yeah. So 10. So I guess that's the same 10.
The 10. Normal. The same 10 we know, which is good. They're not.
This is 6 new classes.
Well, we also know the 6 that are going to be in the are going to precede these because that's been announced.
Yes, that's true. That will be those ancestries in the Galaxy Guide. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. All right. So those are in there. Thirsty mentioned the Jinsels will be in there. So that was a big player in the Scoured Stars kind of whole adventure arc that was there. A bunch of new spells, including Phantasmal Fleet, which was in some of the playtests, but they had some art for that, which I thought was quite cool.
Is that, like, that must be a higher level one, because I haven't seen that.
I think so. If you can bring a whole fleet, that seems like it's a pretty high Witchwarper spell.
Well, but I don't actually see how that would... That would go. Eighth level spell, it is. And it just does a bunch of mental damage by barraging the ground and forces creatures to take cover. There's a lot of really interesting ways you could do that. If your whole role, right, was I just want a broad area damage spell, I think that there's tons of ways you could do that in any kind of fantasy game. And I think the question of, okay, but how do we make it a space fantasy game to do that? Phantasmal Fleet is kind of a good answer, right?
Yeah.
You're getting orbital bombardment.
There are spells that were introduced in Secrets of Magic called Incarnate Spells. These are summoning spells, essentially, that you summon something, it does a big thing when it shows up, and then it leaves. You can then move it, and then it leaves, and it does another thing when it leaves.
And you control when it leaves, right?
And you can leaves the next round. It's like a two round situation. It goes blip, moves, and then it goes away. I think when you sustain it, you move it, and then it goes away. They're generally pretty usually like this is where you summon up an army of skeletons comes out of nowhere and murder, you know, or something huge like a vision of a spawn of Rovagug or something, or I think one of the ones is like some Ark Lord shows up and is like, ah, and blasts a bunch of people and then disappears. Mm-hmm. Definitely, I could see that technology sort of getting used with probably some future magic focused book for Starfinder. Hey, look, yes, and doing things like this fleet, you summon the bone fleet, you know, from the corpse fleet, right. And it, you know, and it's or an image of them or something, but it could actually be them or something like this, a fleet of brass spaceships from the elemental plane of fire shows up, blasts everybody in a big area, and then leaves in a whoosh of flames or something.
So a mechanic kind of like that,
something like that. Definitely, but like the way, you know, sort of Phantasmal Fleet here is fairly, you know, fairly along the same lines as I think it's called Phantasmal Calamity, which is like you basically like make everyone think there's an earthquake, and then they take the mental damage because they think they get hurt.
So it sounds like the player core is going to be a pretty good sized book, given it's going to reprint a lot of the same things that, you know, were in the Pathfinder player core as well, you know, just kind of Starfinder version of them so that you have everything you need. It's going to have all the equipment and stuff. It's going to have a bunch of spells. So it's, I mean, pretty substantial.
Overall. So we've been playing off the plate test edition for a couple months now. Right. And then the last week for work purposes, I was like, and they're like, you should make sure you look at the actual player core. When you do this, I'm like, oh, right. it's been laid out and everything. And it should be, let me go look at that. And, you know, like, so I got a glimpse at what it, how it looks.
So have you been doing it right?
I mean, there's all the changes. Right. All the changes from the plate. There are changes from the plate.
All the errata, right? Is
I mean, that's already in there and maybe and some the other changes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, but if in the course of our playtest game, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to roll my D8s for this. Jason's response is, D8s, huh? Well, don't get used to those too much.
I don't have the whole book memorized or anything. So if you're going to know one thing or another, yeah.
All right. Yeah, so, you know, a lot there. And shortly after that, so after the summer, the GM.
But they didn't say when.
Right. Didn't say when.
Right.
Yeah, it didn't say when about the GM core. Now, they did say for the alien core by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that. So I take that to mean maybe halfway between August and the end of the year, GM core would come.
Fingers crossed, I would say. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So expanded rules, including dynamic hacking, new subsystem, cinematic starship encounters, which I think means that there's no starship in the player core.
That would be usual, right? Because between the Pathfinder player core versus GM core, a lot of the things like, you know, chases and stuff like that is all GM core stuff, not player core stuff.
So you'd have that. So I thought that was interesting. And there was some folks asked Thirsty about Starship Combat, and Thirsty and Jenny both mentioned how they're still working on the full tactical Starship system. So that's not in anything of yet. So they're still figuring that out.
Well, and that's going to be pretty mechanically crunchy. They also said that there's going to be a place later for the, what is it, the mechanic and the technomancer.
Right, that are in playtest.
And if the mechanic and technomancer and technical starship rules all kind of come out in the same book, that wouldn't be a surprise, like some sort of 2026 book.
Yep. And it sounded like cinematic starship was different than narrative starship combat as well.
Maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, the narrative starship combat system is sort of, that was in Starfinder First Edition, is really kind of rudimentary version or a different type of, it's not even rudimentary, it's actually, it does exactly what it needs to do. It's sort of a victory point system. It's a very flexible victory point system like you see in Pathfinder Second Edition. Mm-hmm. So if they say some sort of cinematic, cinematic says to me that there's going to be concessions for what is a fun story or a trope based on the rules. And so I could see something along the lines of, well, your player characters always happen to be right in the right spot for putting some damage back in place or repelling borders or whatever, right? Because that's what that's cinematically more important than technically. Okay, now move your, you know, five squares of movement within the on the map of the ship. Mm-hmm. So that's sure, when I hear cinematic, I mean, like that, I think I'm going to put myself as a character is going to be important in this starship combat.
I see. Yeah. We never really like mixed the peanut butter and the chocolate with that in first edition, right? It was like you didn't have to worry where you were. You were on the bridge or in the engineering. You could do anything. You could do any of the stuff kind of from anywhere. So it didn't have to necessarily worry about, you know, you moving a little guy around or anything like that.
Yeah. When he mentioned cinematic, the first thing I thought of was actually the Scum and Villainy Starship Combat that we did. I thought was very cinematic, you know, in terms of, okay, what are you going to try to do? You know, what's the overall thing you're trying to do? Okay, let's figure out what the challenge rating of that thing would be and what skills you would use to do that and then roll. You know,
and then very, you know, maybe put a clock together to be sure. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's the first thing that came to mind for that. Now, I thought the narrative Starship Combat rules were really awesome. Whoever wrote that did a wonderful job. So I was
going to say something, but I changed. I didn't.
I know. I was wondering if Ron was going to, what direction Ron was going to go there. So.
Well, that's why I realized rudimentary was exactly the wrong word, right? As soon as I said it, I'm like, not because you wrote it, although now I realize that was also a reason to not use something that might sound pejorative, like rudimentary. It did exactly what it needed to do as far as, let's tell the story of the Starship Combat.
Yeah.
I mean, and let's tell the story in a way where the players have control over what they're doing in the Starship Combat.
There was the Starship Chases system that came kind of before it that I sort of looked at and decided kind of based around the idea of like, oh, just what do you want to do and how do you want to do it? And then, if you need to say something about like, oh, three hits and you're, and that's, you know, a ship is gone. You know, that's kind of just basically keeping it. I'm slightly distracted because I think it's pouring rain outside and it just got really loud.
Can't even hear it. So. Yeah.
No, I'm sure you can't hear it, but I can kind of hear it. It sounds like an ocean is happening somewhere. Yes, it's something you don't want to hear when you're in a starship is the sound of the ocean just outside your bulkhead.
That's true. That's true.
Okay. After that, end of the year, Alien Core goes from levels minus 1 to 25 with the Illuminatra, that big thing that Thirsty made.
The Fractal Monster.
Fractal Monster. Yeah. And because the Alien Corps is coming so late, anything out there, any adventures and stuff, will have full stat blocks in them so that you don't have to have, you know, they're not referencing something that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, smart.
So that's, yeah, this is actually really interesting to see how this is going to work for them, because I think people really like that, right? Like users, I like it, yeah. I think, like having all the monsters right where it needs to be, right to run a combat, and having to reference another book, on one hand, it's inconvenient, right? Why didn't you just put the stats right where they need to be? But on the other hand, they're like, well, but why would you just reproduce stats I already have in this other book and lose me a column of what could be more story or more adventure?
Right.
And I think that there's a tendency in print products to push towards being concise and referring to monsters in other sources, whereas in digital products, there's more of a tendency to go the other way. Well, we have an unlimited amount of, you know, pages in a PDF. We'll just go ahead and give you all the stats that you need. And so people can kind of use one form factor or another to kind of get whatever it is they'd like. It was very educational to me in going back and forth to learn that the preferences can be different based on the two form factors. But the early Starfinder 2nd edition stuff is going to be using the digital form factor for their physical products. And I wonder whether people are going to be like, oh, I really like that. Or not, right? I guess they'll see what the public future feedback is.
Yeah. Interesting. Because I run most of my stuff digitally and using Foundry most of the time, it's all just sort of like there too. Like, you know, even if it's an AP, like I can click on the token and there's the stat block, because all that stuff is, you know, basically it's either in the book of the adventure or it's on, you know, Nethys anyway. So, you know, essentially available.
Yeah, one of the things they didn't say, and nobody asked, is will all these adventures have Foundry support when they're launched? Because that would be really, really cool if they did. I had heard that that was kind of a goal at one point, but you know, it's hard to say because that's a whole different mechanism to get people to do that. You know, I don't think they do it in house. So
I've seen most of the Pathfinder APs getting the Foundry support as they're coming out since, like, which one? Because they haven't all didn't have them.
Right.
But more launched, recently. But like, maybe since Season of Ghosts, they've all been on Foundry somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
and that's especially available through the Paizo store, you know, basically, right?
So that would be helpful.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, I don't know the full extent of the mechanism that gets those things from Pathfinder to Foundry, but like, if it's big enough, it can, you know, because it's using the same kind of stuff anyway, like the same sort of like digital skeleton new Starfinder monster, I bet. But you know, it might be easier to do, you know, that we're all using the same system.
Speaking of digital adventures and whatnot, they did show a screenshot art for Murder in Metal City, a deluxe Starfinder adventure that takes place on Abalon, City of Striving.
See, this is the thing that I found most exciting about what they were saying, because this is not just an adventure. It's sort of a whole presentation factor product that's going to have all kinds of stuff in it, right? As far as, I mean, what did they say specifically?
Cards, tokens, maps, GM tools. Yeah.
Yep.
All kinds of stuff.
All in one box. And a brand new ancestry and...
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's not a beginner box, so it's going to be for people who have the game and want to play the game, but rather than just, okay, here is your soft cover or hardcover adventure, we're doing a different way of presenting an adventure product for you with kind of everything. I don't know if it's going to be everything self-contained, but it's got a lot of stuff sort of self-contained. And I think that's really
including appealing. Custom minis, or not minis, pre-gens just for... They're tailored for the adventure as well, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm curious as to what the cards are exactly. I'm wondering if they maybe put some of like the spells that the pre-gens have on cards, like we have all the
spell cards. That would be really
creature
helpful.
Cards, like for the monsters.
Creatures. Oh yeah, like the from the what are they called? They're called something. They're just called
battle cards.
Yeah. Battle cards, battle boxes. Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Yep. Battle cards. Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, cards with the monster. This is what you look at, and I see the stats on the other side. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're playing in person, those are really helpful.
I don't know how well those did, right? But they had like, aren't you doing for your Fists of the Ruby Phoenix? You got the Fists of the Ruby Phoenix
battle cards.
And I know that one of the last things I worked on was the Abomination Vaults battle cards. So it was like, here's all the cards you need to run this entire adventure path. Mm-hmm. Pretty convenient, I think, for pulling in a lot of the, you know, you want the fancy art on one side to be able to share your players and the stats on the other in order to help you run it. That's something that could be super useful.
Yeah, for in-person play, and I can see that in a box like this. Seems like a lot of stuff they've been doing is kind of for online play, you know, trying to enable that as well with things. So I'm glad that they have some focus here, and I actually hope for all the APs, I hope they do battle cards and specific tokens for the APs. I think that'd be awesome if those are available. Though I don't know that they're doing tokens anymore or pawns.
You haven't done pawns for an adventure path.
For a while,
I like those, though. It's nice, and
they're helpful, but it's the matter of, like, they don't sell too well, unfortunately.
It is a murder mystery in Striving on Avalon with a cyberpunk/space noir type of vibe to it, which sounds pretty cool.
What's interesting about the cover of this is that it looks like it's Quig and Raya, the iconic mechanic and technomancer, respectively.
Well, that's a good
point. Did you think it was Raya? I looked at it really
quick. Oh, no, not Raya. No, it's not. She's got the Raya. This is an android. Yeah. This is definitely an android.
I thought it was like Isif with long hair is what it looked like to me instead of a moa. It
might be. Yeah. Isif is now just it's difficult to say. That looks like Quig to me.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. So I don't know.
But you're just stereotyping all Yusoki now. Well,
who is Quig's drone? That's Quig's drone that's really the thing that makes that identifiably Quig is that the same drone is there.
He's doing some sort of drone thing.
All right.
Could be now just two different. It's probably two of the pre-gens, most likely.
Right. Yeah. From in there. Yeah.
From whatever.
Now I'm going to have to put the art. I'm going to have to put the art here in our thing again because we're talking about it so much.
Although, they could do something like this, right? One of the pre-gens could be the mechanic, right? It could be Quig because if it's a pre-gen first level adventure, they only need to present the first couple levels of the mechanic. They don't need to have done everything all the way up. And if by this point, whatever product that class is going to go into is settled enough that they'd be able to kind of show off the first couple levels of it, maybe that's a pre-gen in here.
The possible tricky thing is that as long as it doesn't reference anything that's not in player core, Starfinder player core.
Right.
You know, but you could probably do.
You could probably do. If you were putting everything on the if everything's on pre-generated character sheets and, you know, cards, maybe.
Did they?
I don't know. Mechanic is maybe harder because you've got drones and the drone rules are probably separate. And I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't get a date on it. No.
Okay. So we'll have to see. You know, I mean, drone rules are not going to be probably that different than the Animal Companion rules, right? I mean, they kind of functioned the same way in 1E as Animal Companions for Pathfinder 1E. I can't imagine they'd be similar enough. I don't know, but I mean, you've got to do the other stuff, tech stuff, right? You know, whatever, or just sort of like Inventors has the Construct Companion innovation, right? That's got its own sort of semi-separate set of rules. Borrowing from those maybe would be a way to sort of showcase what a drone does in some of them. I don't know.
Right. And they talked about a new ancestry, the Khazar, in there as well, the plant people.
Well, isn't that a super weird choice? They're the plant people.
No, because there's a thriving, they're from Avalon. They've always been from Avalon. Or for the most part,
I thought they were from Castrovel.
No, there's a thriving. There's a It's not striving. What's it? It's like an ice well. There's like this, you know, obviously most of Avalon is sort of desolate nothingness right. because of where it is in the solar system, and it's because it's run by machines. But there's like an ice hole, essentially. Don't bleep me out.
Filled with atmosphere. Right?
Atmosphere and plants and stuff. And that's where the Kizar, I think, are originally from.
Oh. Okay.
I thought they were always Kestrel as well.
Plant creature.
Yeah, but maybe it's, I don't know. But
Kestrel already has too many ancestries in it.
There's so many plants on Kestrel so already.
No, it's just, it's already got, it's got Lashunta, it's got elves, it's got the Formians, right? Formians?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Too many. Oh, three. Three is enough for one planet. Three ancestries is enough for one planet. Don't look at Galarian.
Nobody's looking at Galarian in Starfinder anymore.
Yeah.
And rude if you'd bring it up even, frankly, because it's so gone.
Right. They also talked about a Starfinder novel, Era of the Eclipse by Tim Pratt, which has an audiobook out as well. And it talks
I like Tim Pratt stuff, so this is neat.
Yeah. What else has he done?
Did he the Liars stuff? What did he... Liar's Blade?
Liar's Blade and Liar's something. I can't remember the name of it.
But it starts on Absalon Station the day after the gap. And talks about what happens there. And it includes To the Iconics when they were just junior Starfinders. Kind of gives some like an origin story for them, it sounds like. So
cool.
Which sounds kind of neat.
I'm gonna jump back here. I'm gonna rewind us a little bit and apologize to Ron because yes, the Khazars are originally from Kestrel, but they do live. There's a big. Some of them do. There's a big chunk of them that moved to Avalon and live in those ice wells.
So. Yeah, well, there's a lot there after Ron was right, and
it was just static to you.
Well, let's talk about something where I know that Jason is right. It's the Infinity Deck from Paizo Games.
That's
I want to hear about this.
It's a deck of cards, y'all.
Okay.
The conceit is that it's a deck of cards that the rules are lost in the gap. However, they're just also everywhere. There's like if something happened to Hoyle, right, and erased Hoyle from everyone's, but you'd have these cards. Everyone's got a deck of cards in their house. What are they? They just look like. You know, they're just there. So a bunch of people, a bunch of, you know, ancestries and civil and settlements and whatnot have created games around them, right? So like, we got this card. How do you, people, that's what, you know, minds do, you know, sentient minds do. Well, they'll find something, they'll make a game out of it, right? And so this is a sort of a flexible deck of playing cards that comes with four games written for it. And then the idea is that feel free to make your own games.
Well, sweet.
And it's also in the game as something that the players
can play. Yes, it's in the setting. Yeah, right. It's in Starfinder. Yeah. You can go and you can set this and you can play one of these games that are in the Infinity Deck as something in your campaign or before the adventure starts, you know, waiting for someone who's half an hour late. Well, let's play a quick game of this. Or you can, I don't want to say too much about what's in the games because we don't say, but there's a game that, you know, works, that you can play it in such a way like, oh, maybe you'll lose your starship or whatever, you know, and stuff like that. So like, you know, gambling. You gotta have it. You kind of have a game like that. Isles
into gambling now.
No, yeah. don't listen. but they're going to look real good, real fancy cards. Five suits basically to make it a little different and weird. And then like some different sort of face cards that are going to be interesting.
And you worked on this with Joe Pacini.
That's right. Joe Pacini and I worked on this. This was, just to sort of showcase. We've been talking about something like this for a while now. And I'm happy that we finally get to sort of like do it and put it out there. Cause it was good. It's fun.
Did you also design all four of the discovered games to play
with
it?
Yes, we did.
That's neat.
Yeah. Nice. Because, you know, creating a deck of playing cards, you're saying, it's got five suits and some, you know, that takes like, 30 minutes that you can just decide on what the suits are. And the bulk of it is the games. And, you know, we wrote like a bunch of them and we kind of had, you know, we pared them down a little bit to the ones that were the most.
Exciting. Instead of Go Fish, you have now Go Laser Netting or something, right?
Go Laser, it's called.
Well, once this is out, I want you to tell us which is your favorite of the four games and why.
That's, okay, fair enough.
We'll get this. We'll do a whole show on the.
This should be coming out at Gen Con. Fingers crossed.
Wait, really?
Is there a digital version that we can play online?
No, not a digital version.
We'll have to hold them really up.
Not exactly.
Trust me.
I could, well, you know, not to say that I don't have a digital version that exists that I could play with y'all, but just for, that we use for playtesting purposes, but that is a proprietary
thing.
You know, Roll20 allows you to make decks and stuff, so we could build decks in there pretty easily.
Oh, well, I have it in Tabletop Simulator. Do you all have Tabletop Simulator?
I think
everyone does.
Playtesting in Tabletop Simulator.
But Tabletop Simulator is great for playtesting.
It is, yeah.
All right. They kind of closed, their last thing they talked about is they weren't going to talk much about org play or anything like that. Stuff's coming down the road. But then they did show a picture of Zoe and mentioned that there is an adventure path exploring the darkest secrets of something.
Dark secrets.
Dark secrets.
Always good to explore in an adventure path.
And in the cover art of it, they show Zoe and a planet behind him is being shattered, cracked in half. So,
and this is the one with the weird, like, flying, the spaceship that looks like a bird with a laser tube as a face?
Yes.
Okay.
So I don't know what all that reference
if I had to guess, that's a Corpse Fleet spaceship.
Yes, that looks like a Corpse Fleet.
It kind of looks like it's made out of bone.
And it looks like Alderaan, though, exploding, but I don't know.
It does, and you know
it's
what?
It's definitely not Eox, because Eox did not blow up that extensively.
Yeah.
But you know what EX is responsible for?
The diaspora?
Which is two planets that exploded.
But I thought it was two planets that ran into each other.
I don't think they ran into each other. I think they were destroyed.
Oh.
Yeah, remember Dead Sons? It was all about that that thing at the end that you had to find that did stuff and
could blow stuff up. Stellar Degenerator?
The Stellar Degenerator and the Empire of Bones.
No one's playing that one anymore. you know all about what's going on. That had nothing to do with the creation of the diaspora.
No, but I thought that was something that could blow up planets. So,
no, it would kill a sun. It would.
Oh, a sun. Oh,
it was a stellar generator. It would dead the sun. You know.
Okay.
Hence the
title. Yeah.
So, okay.
I remember working on that. Trying to.
I thought it could blow.
So
up
what planets. Is this? What does this do again? Coming in at book five to do the development, I'm like, we have to tell them what it does at this point. I'm just like, stellar generator, ooh, spooky. It accelerates the life cycle of the sun to turn it into
Never mind. It's not a planet destroyer.
I'm totally spoiling a lot of what goes on in stellar
generator. I know. But that's
the whole time
I thought I did that. All right.
Well, let me jump in. And say that Jason is totally correct on this one, because a quick search myself is that the diaspora was founded when the planets Damiar and Iovo were shattered by a magical super weapon that the Elebrians of Eox built. Yeah. So,
see, that's why I thought it was the Stellar Degenerator. I didn't realize it was a different thing.
I'm just going to spoil everything about Dead Sons is that the Stellar Degenerator was, of course, not created by the Librians of Eox.
No. We knew that.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. And they just said that there was a lot more coming down the road. So a lot more information, a lot more announcements. So I imagine this will be the typical drip campaign, like every month or so they mention something.
Yeah, that was a very expected end, because no way they're going to end a presentation like that with like, and that's it, everybody.
No more until Gen Con.
Starfinder's done.
All right, but still, that's a lot. That's a lot, and not even a full hour. They really touched on a whole bunch of stuff, so it was
a lot to tell.
Pretty good show.
I think so. What excites you most, John? Murder in Metal City excites me most. John, what are you most excited about?
Well. I was excited about that as well. I think just seeing the player core and the GM core, I mean, just seeing the whole rule set out there, what the final version is going to be like, and how they equip everything, you know, because we see in the playtest a really good snapshot of where they're going, but we don't know where it ends up. And so for me, a lot of that is, where does it end up?
Okay. Jason, what are you excited about?
I like monsters, so I'm always excited about a bestiary type books. Love them. Alien Core, all the way. Baby. Awesome.
Well, you have to wait the longest then.
I do. Or do I?
No, I know. It's already being, yeah, it's already being written now. All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.